Good morning, everyone. It is Tuesday, December 6th, the Vic Sports Breakfast, Sky Sports Radio, and a very good morning to you wherever and however you are listening and you're waking up this morning to, well, the first penalty shootout in the round of 16 at the World Cup, and after it finished 1-1 after extra time between Croatia and Japan. Croatia again, they just find a way, really. For a country of 4 million people, don't they? Well, they do very, very well. The finalists of 4 years ago at the World Cup, and they won the shootout 3-1. Some of Japan's penalties, dearie me, but the Croatian keeper outstanding, saved three penalties in that shootout. England won a famous victory in Rawalpindi last night as well in that test match. And, Pakistan put up a pretty fierce resistance until they lost 5-9 late in the final session of the test match to go down. There last night. We got a couple of players called up as cover for Pat Cummins in the test squad for Australia ahead of the second test, the day-night test in Adelaide starting on Thursday. And we've had some Socceroos return home to Sydney as well last night. And we got the great L Daly back in town. G'day, Lozza.
Morning, boys. How are we?
Yeah, very well. How was your weekend? And did you ride the emotions with the Socceroos?
I did, yeah. I watched them. I thought they were terrific. Obviously, the last 20 minutes there, you started to dream and think, oh, wow, is this going to be a possibility? Can the Socceroos pull off an upset? But they tried, you know, extremely hard. Obviously, technically, the Argentinians were too good for us, but we showed plenty of spirit, and that's what we've done all tournament. So while it's sad to come to an end, I think Graham Arnold and the team have done a tremendous job. Well done to them. But again, we continually talk about football in this country, how the Socceroos unite everybody. They've got to take advantage of this moment in time. And I don't know how they do that. But you'd like to think that, you know, numbers and more players will get, you know, better opportunities. And hopefully some of our star players from the World Cup may get an opportunity in some of those higher leagues around the world. And if that's the case, that'll put us in good stead for the next World Cup.
Morning to you, pup. And I had the England-Pakistan test on in the background last night, and I actually went to bed just before all the action happened, right at the end. But look, England, that's only their third ever win in Pakistan. It was the third most runs ever scored in a test match overall between the two sides, and it's produced a result. So 1,768 runs scored. And you've got to give credit to England. They found a way because they were hosed by... They should have had an LBW. Jack Leach got... I can't remember. I think it was Salmon out cold. But DRS, I think it's the one flaw with DRS is the bounce. Mm. To me, there was no way it was going over the top of the stumps. But that's what DRS showed. But in the end, England took 5-9 and won the test match. And I couldn't help but think, watching it, you know they're going to be completely different at home over there next year than what they were 12 months ago out here.
Yeah, morning, boys. Morning to our listeners. Yeah, well done to England. Gutsy declaration to set up a chance of a victory. They honoured their word. They made it very clear before the first ball was bowled that they were in Pakistan to try and win, and they were happy to risk losing. And they did it with their first opportunity. So, yeah, courageous from Ben Stokes, and they got the result they were after. So, brilliant performance. They, you know, up until, you know, the last sort of hour of that game, both teams could have won. It was, again, there was some reverse swing, little bit of spin, but a very flat batting pitch. Saw a lot of runs in that test match. And they did well to knock Pakistan over. They gave themselves enough time and found a way to bowl them out. So Pakistan will be disappointed because they had a chance to win that test match. Even though they were chasing 330 or 340 on that last day. Well, actually ended up being less than that, but in their second innings, 340 they needed. It sounds like a lot of runs on that wicket in their own backyard. You would have thought they'll every chance of getting there. So, yeah, England continue to, I guess, change their style of play under Ben Stokes and Brendan McCullum. I think they're willing to take a lot more risks. They're a lot more aggressive with their approach in general. You look at the, you know, they make 550 in the first day with the bat. Now, I know it was a belter, but man, they've gone so hard day one of a test match, and that's to give themselves enough time to have a crack at this result. So, yeah, that's going to be a good series. Australia versus England in England. I think they're obviously a much better team in their own backyard, but they're playing a good brand of cricket at the moment.
I saw Mark Waugh tweet last night, McCullum, or this morning, McCullum Stokes changing the way Test cricket is to be played. Courageous, fearless, positive mindset gets them the win in Rawal Pindi on the most docile surface. I don't think any other team in world cricket would have rolled the dice like that.
I agree.
Bring on the Ashes next year.
I agree with that, but let me tell you what the other side looks like. When you're willing to take these risks and you win and it comes off, you are changing the game. But you lose 3 or 4 test matches like this, and then you're under the pump because your record says, oh, we've won 6, lost 4. Uh-oh. Now are we still willing to take that risk? Are we still willing to declare at that stage? But the way they're going, they mightn't see that. They mightn't have to worry about that because they're finding ways to win. And it is an exciting brand of cricket, so they both deserve a lot of credit.
It's funny you say that because when they had that DRS decision overturned, I was thinking, well, Ben Stokes has stuffed this up. I thought Pakistan were going to win the test match. They were batting pretty well.
That's exactly right.
As you predicted yesterday, that they could very well win the test match.
That's the line you sit on. And when it goes your way, your declaration looks good and your brand of cricket looks good. But if it doesn't...
you've got to wear it.
Yeah, you need to be accountable for it. But it seems like they are. Seems like they're happy to challenge themselves and put their hand up if it doesn't go their way. But no, good on them.
Loza, the Newcastle Knights put out a release confirming what's been reported, the signings of a couple of emerging English stars for seasons 2024 and 25. So Kai Pearce-Paul, the 21-year-old, he's a giant, 196 centimetres tall, more than 100 kilos, young forward, been playing for Wigan over there in the Super League. And also Will Price, who he's turning 20, I think yesterday or today, who's a 5'8 / fullback. They're going to the Knights for seasons 2024 and 25. Two really exciting young talents. And even though I guess a lot of people in Newcastle lament the fact they're, you know, struggling to keep their own talent there, they will welcome these two signings because they could be anything.
Yeah, I don't know a lot about the middle, only what I've read, and I've seen some short and small highlights of both players, but they've certainly got plenty of ability and they've stood out in the Super League. So getting them at the right age to come here to Australia, Newcastle do need a lot of help at the moment, and I think they will add a touch of class to this Newcastle side. The other thing about when you recruit English players, they add something different to your team. The game is played differently over there in England. It might take them a while to adjust, but given that they're coming over at this age, they've got plenty of talent, I think they'll make a real impact on the competition because I know that a lot of sides were keen to get these players to their club, but Newcastle have succeeded. The other thing about getting players from England as well is that they don't miss a lot of representative football. When you're recruiting, the Aussie players because of Origin and other games of football that are involved in during the year, they play extra football. So I think you've seen it with the Raiders have a bit of success recruiting English players in the past, and these look like two good young signings for the Newcastle Knights.
And good news at the Tigers. Isaiah Papali'i rocked up to Concord yesterday. He's not due back for pre-season training until early next year because, of course, he was at the World Cup with New Zealand. But after all that speculation, he wouldn't leave Parramatta. Even when he said no, or he is going to the Tigers, if you didn't believe it, Tigers fans, he was there yesterday.
Great news.
So the Tigers, the Sheens revolution underway there at Concord, pup. Yeah. So got to be happy about that. But what about a potential, I wouldn't call it a revolution, but the fact that this potential bolter, Lance Morris, has been called up, Western Australian quick, as cover for Pat Cummins. Michael Neese has been called up as well. You'd expect Scott Boland to play, though, be the first cab off the rank. But could they potentially rest the other pace bowlers, Stark and or Hazelwood, for the second test starting on Thursday? So Lance Morris, certainly an exciting prospect, 24 years of age. He's the leading Shield wicket taker this season, 27 wickets at 18.4. Overall, he's played 18 first-class matches, has 59 wickets at 25.08. I'd seen his name fleetingly, seeing that he'd been taking wickets, Clarkie, but when you go and watch, he's certainly got some gas, gets up around the 150 mark, 145, pretty consistently. And Jeff Thompson, as we'll get to the headlines, he's called, just throw him straight in.
No, he's not playing. He's not playing in front of Boland. He's not playing in front of Nessa. I think it's a good selection to have him in around the squad. He's the leading wicket taker. He deserves to be spoken about. The pace he's bowling. Again, there's a big difference between bowling in Shield cricket versus playing international cricket. But if you were thinking about giving him a crack, it's against the team like the West Indies, yeah, for sure. Adelaide's a little bit different to... in a test match to what he's played in Shield cricket as well. But no, I think it's good selection and nice reward to have him in and around the squad. He can meet all the Aussie boys if he hasn't met them and be around the likes of Pat Cummins, Josh Hazlewood, Mitchell Starc. Won't do him any harm at all to be able to train alongside them. But yeah, he won't be playing. I think Cummins is going to struggle. I know he said he's very confident, but I just don't think it's worth the risk. I still can't believe he was out on the field fielding. So if that's the case, I would imagine Scott Boland will come into that attack, and the other two quicks, Hazlewood and Starc, unless they're injured, will certainly play.
And Andrew McDonald was asked that yesterday on Pat Cummins fielding the other day, and McDonald saying he, you know, wasn't at risk as he was able to manage the tempo in which he ran.
What?
And him being out there helped the Aussies control the game.
What
was his explanation for that?
Anyway. I'm not sure how you're not at risk. If you've got a quad strain and you run, you're at risk.
Yeah, well, that's what I would have thought.
So too. I think straight away, I know he was jogging for the ball, but there is still a risk. If he bends down to pick it up or if he does. That's why, even if he was in slip, would have been a lot less risk, but there's still a risk. You've still got to die. Well, and you still move to your left or right.
Ball comes at you at pace that you'd want to catch
exactly
for a wicket.
Right. Yeah.
If you're doing reflex actions, aren't you, Pop, without even thinking about it.
It was strange. It was strange. Why, like Steve Smith is Captain Australia enough times, Australia was going to win that test match. Pat didn't need to be on the field. So it was, I'm still trying to work out like why I can understand why Pat wanted to go out there because he's the captain, but yeah, it's very strange. Very strange.
Well, Steve Smith could captain in Adelaide again as he did last year at very short notice when Pat Cummins got COVID ahead of that Ashes test there. So we'll see how that transpires.
Day-night
test,
isn't it? Next
48 hours. Yes, it is.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Okay. Quick break. And oh, by the way, his nickname, Lance Morris, the Wild Thing. Another Wild Thing. You
Sean
played
Tate.
With one? Sean Tate.
Tatey was the Wild Thing. Tatey was rapid. He was quick. Unfortunately, his body didn't hold up, Tatey, but I wonder why, bowling 155 Ks and slinging him down. He had a bad elbow his entire career, Tatey, but, Matt, he could bowl. He was lightning.
I could imagine in some of those, like, you know, less prepared nets, grass
South
nets
Africa.
That you'd play.
I remember facing him in South Africa.
He would have been frightening.
We had a conversation, I think it was in Johannesburg, in preparation for that test. And I think there'd been like a few guys had been hit in the head in the test match. So we sort of just said, everyone said, let's just be like, we don't need someone else getting injured at training. Tatey bowled this ball to Andrew Simons. Andrew Simons went forward to block it, did not pick it up. This thing smacked him right on the badge, right in the middle of the helmet, put a hole in his helmet.
At about 150.
At about 150. And Tatey was going, mate, it's like he was so sorry. He didn't mean it. It just, that was the thing,
just
the Wild Thing.
Off a link.
He didn't know where they were going. Oh, I don't bowl bouncers in the nets, he reckons. It was a rapid bouncer, took the crest off his helmet, put a hole in his helmet.
Headline. Our man Bulldog with a big scoop on the back page of the Daily Telegraph. Don't lose our Arnie is the headline there. So this article say that Graham Arnold, not to anyone's surprise, is in demand elsewhere as his camp awaits any offer from Football Australia. Now, apparently, he wants to remain Socceroos coach, but he's also open to a move elsewhere. And Bulldog's report also saying that a source had no doubt that Football Australia boss James Johnson had met with John Aloisi pre the World Cup. And we had Aloisi on the show, of course, yesterday, who said, you know, yeah, he sort of indicated, we'll play what he had to say later, but he sort of indicated that he
wants the
job.
Definitely, just at the right time.
At the right time. Yeah, yeah.
He was. I think he was very honest, John. I think he was. He made it very clear that he saw coaching Australia no different to playing for Australia. That's how much how important he sees that role, and he would love to do it one day. But he also said, if Graham Arnold wants this job, then no brainer. He should have it until he's, you know, his time's up. So I thought he was very honest.
Yeah, Loz surely the time. We were emphasising it yesterday. Football Australia has to, you know, almost go crawling to Graham Arnold going, thank you very much for all the money you put in our coffers, all the goodwill you've done for Australian football in the last few months in particular, and give him an offer he can't refuse to continue.
Well, it's interesting because they've improved as the tournament went on, and he had a hard task trying to qualify the Socceroos for the World Cup. And you got to remember, they played a lot of their games away from home. It was during COVID. They didn't have some players available. And I think he's done a tremendous job at this tournament and, in fact, just to qualify. So Arnie would have opportunities elsewhere, but I think his passion lies with the Socceroos. I think he wants to help. And I think when you look at the squad and the age some of these players will be when the next World Cup rolls around, potentially we've got a stronger side than the one we took over this year. So I think he started something that he wants to finish. He's disappointed that we didn't go further than the top 16, but I think most people outside would say that's a tremendous effort, just reaching the final 16. But there's no doubt that he'll be given an opportunity somewhere to coach again. I'm just not sure it might be the Socceroos, but I think he'd done a mighty job, and I'd love to see him stay in charge for another 4 years.
And on the back page of the Herald, Socceroos 2026, as it looks ahead to what our squad could look like in 4 years' time, when a lot of these players should be hitting their peak, by the way. Players call on Chiefs to make most of World Cup momentum, also on the back page of the Herald. And indecision by FA may send Arnie overseas, part of the back page of the Australian. And we saw a lot of the Socceroos players returning to Sydney last night, among them Matt Ryan, the captain, of course, and naturally they all gave Graham Arnold a ringing endorsement. By the way, about to kick off Brazil and South Korea in the round of 16. So the tournament favourites, Brazil, who were playing, well, there's a lot of conjecture about Pelé, one of the greatest of all time, Brazilian great, and his health. And I see that his daughters have come out and said it's not as grim as some have reported, but he's certainly been in hospital battling a lung infection. Certainly Brazil will be playing for him, no doubt. And for this game in the round of 16, they're $1.23 favourites in the 90-minute market. South Korea, $11. The draw paying $6.50. And we'll speak to Mossy just after the 6 o'clock news. And just that game this morning, again, if you missed it. So Japan and Croatia finished 1-1, but Croatia won 3-1 on penalties. And Papas, the unofficial goalkeeping coach here in the studio, you would have been pretty miffed by Japan's penalties.
How many hooks? How many slices?
Yeah, there was certainly... Well, I saw one. I didn't see every shot, but I saw one, which was the obvious hook from the Japanese player.
Saved or goal?
Saved.
See, good keeping.
Yeah, but the first penalty actually was the open foot.
Oh, slice.
To the right.
Save?
Saved by the Croatian keeper. The lack of power on this shot
just tap
was
it in.
Significant.
Yeah.
It was a really, really poor penalty. It set the tone for the whole shootout.
Yeah, see, I'm not a penalty taking expert. I'm just a
goalkeeping
expert.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't. I find it. I'm unsure why they go. Even you know where they go the fake and go straight down the guts. I don't know about that theory either. I think they're expecting the keeper to dive one way or the other. But
well,
yeah,
if you go
I don't
down
know.
The guts, you got to kick it.
Well,
hard.
I think I would think I'd be kicking hard anyway, hard with control. Not over-kicking. I'm not trying to beat the goalie with power, but I'm trying to get the ball in the corner, either bottom left, bottom right, top left, top right. That's what I would be thinking. But like I say, I'm no expert in the goal taking. I'm an expert in the goal saving.
Yeah, I can hear some of our football aficionados listening just going, have a listen to these blokes.
Mate, it's no different than them saying, why'd you play that shot, Clarkie? What a terrible shot, mate. Let it go. It's a metre outside off stump. You're only on 5. Thanks for that, mate. I know.
Willow from Windsor on the text line. The result in the England v Pakistan test match and how it played out is why test cricket is still the greatest format of them all.
Yes, love that.
Good on you, Willow. And it was. Love it was that. Enthralling. Well, I was into it last night.
If you can get Test cricket into day 5 where both teams can still win the game, it is unbelievable watching. And that again, that like you look at the first innings from both teams, you go, oh my God, this is an absolute belter. No way there's going to be a result. And that's a lot of time in the subcontinent, the game actually quickens up. So the first 3 days are generally really slow because the pitch is good. Then it deteriorates and it just goes, you go from there's not enough time in the game for anyone to win to you win on halfway through day five. Like you win it by lunch. It speeds up so quickly because that natural variation in the pitches over there.
Brazil 1-0, early goal against South Korea, 8 minutes in, and there they are looking to book a spot against Croatia. Gee, that'd be a huge quarterfinal, Brazil-Croatia. So, gee, some of these quarterfinals, they're looking awesome, aren't they?
France, tell you England. What, Peter, the opening minutes of that game, Brazil just looked very fast.
How good do they look, Loz? Yeah,
very fast and very slick with the ball.
Good strip as well, I reckon, Brazil.
It's iconic, really.
Yeah, I love it. I love watching them play.
Just very good.
Yeah. It's like they got six forwards. It's like they just kick it up the front. Someone will score. I reckon they're that good.
Well, yeah. I mean, this is the quarterfinals so far. Netherlands, Argentina, England, France, and potentially Brazil, Croatia. Gee, that's some good games, isn't it? So, getting to the money stage, of course, of the World Cup, and we're going to speak to Mossy shortly. Just watching on the screen here as well, Loz, in our studio. What about the drama in the NFL yesterday? Jimmy Garoppolo broken foot out for the season for San Francisco. Oh, they did beat Miami 33-17. And just around the league, I'm seeing that Baker Mayfield's been released from Carolina. And there's also a story that Tom Brady's being linked to a return to New England next year when his contract runs out.
Yeah, we're talking mid he's not done yet, Tampa the old Bay. Boy. He's not done.
Oh, and there's something else for you here, Pup, as well that I found.
Not a Giselle story.
Yeah, there's a Giselle story. She's been at...
Who's she dating?
She's just chilling at Disney.
Good girl.
There you go.
With the kids?
Looks like with friends.
Okay, well, you're allowed to do that, aren't you? Yeah. After a separation, you're allowed a bit of friend time.
Yeah, so she's just chilling.
I think, watch your space. I think T. Brady, he'll kick on. He won't be retiring again. And watch him get back together.
He can't be on
Look, they're just going through a bit of, you know, they just need a bit of space. They just need a bit of time away just to work out. You know what? Life wasn't that bad. Brady Giselle combo. Well, I reckon they might come back for the kids.
Yeah, what old is new again, eh?
Can you see Brady going back to New England though, Loz?
Oh, depends what his relationship's like with Belichick. That was strained there at one stage, and they both denied it. But I don't know, Middo. Would you take Tom Brady back?
No.
What?
I'm not taking him. He's 46.
Mate, he might be past his best. He mightn't be at his best.
He'll
but
be a
mate,
corpse on the
we've
field.
Been abusing how bad quarterbacks are for the last month.
Nah.
There's no good quarterbacks. Handful. Mm. Brady's still a genius.
But the other thing too, Mido, is that he's going to move across again to the toughest conference.
Good point. Back to the AFC.
But like if he stays in the...
Clubbies.
NFC, that's pretty open still, isn't it?
Yeah, oh, very much.
I mean, you look at the NFC, you've still got Philly and Minnesota who are having, you know, really good seasons, but all the others, have been
tails
okay,
off pretty quickly.
You know? And you look at what happened to San Francisco yesterday. They've lost Trey Lance at the start of the year. Now they've lost Garoppolo. They're sitting at 8-4. They're top of the NFC West, but you can't see them doing anything now.
Well, they've got such a good team, Loz. It's just, what do they do with quarterback? I mean,
well, that's the thing. It's so important.
The rest of their team is stacked.
Yeah, yes. But you can't win with the third string quarterback.
Yeah, you wouldn't think so. You wouldn't think
mate,
so. No,
that'd
you wouldn't
be one
think
of the biggest
so.
Upsets of all time.
I know. I just fear their side is so good.
Brazil,
got a great
Brazil about
game.
The score, Loz.
Oh,
two zip. Yep, two zip here. Look at this.
Two zips.
Cool hair, dude.
Is this Neymar?
Yep.
Oh,
he just tapped it in.
Oh, that's a dreadful penalty.
Jeez,
he
went the slice as well.
I can't stand that stuttered crap. Well, anyway, it's in the back of the neck.
They're liking the white, the shaved white head, aren't they?
Yeah. Shades of Michael Clark's one-day international debut.
Tennis ball-like. Yeah, that was a bad choice of haircuts by me.
Oh, Brazil all over them. 2-0 up against South Korea. And there he is, Neymar.
Genius.
Seven goals in 12 World Cup matches now for Neymar. And on that note, let's go to Qatar. For the last time in Qatar before he comes back to Australia, Phil Moss. How are you, Mossy?
Well, to be fair, I'm just watching the replay. Did you just call that a shocking penalty?
No, I just hate the stutter step.
No, you did. You did. You called it a shocking penalty.
What's the goalie doing, though? Like, look, he's unsure. He goes nowhere.
You know what?
Pick a side, dude. Pick a side, mate. You're going left. You're going right. You stay in the same spot.
And Clarkey is our unofficial goalkeeping expert.
Mate.
Anyway, yeah,
I remember seeing Clarkey field in the slips, and he was like the Grey Wiggle.
Mate, I needed to pick a side. No worry, I went the wrong way regularly. He's right-handed, Michael, not left-handed, you idiot.
Yeah, look, I take that back, Mossy.
Clarkey, can you please give Mido an uppercut? Yeah. I've never seen a poor or a, what was the word? A poor penalty that hits the back of the net.
Mido doesn't like the little hot shoe shuffle, and he doesn't like it when they just tap it in. He wants to see power.
When he was playing for United,
he always went power with his goal taking.
Hey, I never played for United.
Budgie United?
Yeah.
Back of 75. Anyway.
So good.
Well, Brazil, I mean, the quarterfinals at this point, Mossy, I mean, you're looking at, well, provided Brazil obviously don't have a meltdown here, Brazil, Croatia after Croatia. What was going on in that shootout with Japan, by the way? They just punch above their weight, don't they, the Croatians? They got there in the end.
They do. And what about Modric being substituted just before full time of extra time? So he wasn't there to take a penalty, which is just remarkable. And Japan, so for me, if you look at Japan losing on penalties, you look at Korea now 2-0 down to Brazil, that makes Australia the best performed, well, arguably, because people will still say that Australia lost to Argentina, but it makes us arguably the best performed Asian nation at this World Cup, which is quite remarkable. But there we just saw that disgusting penalty once again, Mido. But anyway, it hit the back of the net. It's been a remarkable World Cup.
Mossy, tell me about England. Like, I know we wind them up and they sing, it's coming home, blah, blah, blah. But watching them the other day, they've got to be a contender. They look brilliant.
I haven't been one of their fans, Clarkey, you know. I didn't tip them before the tournament. I haven't tipped them through the group stage, but certainly they are growing into the tournament. I think the key point of last night's game was Harry Kane actually scoring. They've had a lot of goal scorers, but Harry Kane getting on the score sheet, I think, is a good sign going deeper in the tournament. They're now through to the last stage of the tournament, and to have him and obviously Raheem Sterling went home. Now, I believe that what happened was that his house back in England was robbed with his partner and kids in the house. That's why he didn't play in that game, which is horrific. And I hope that him and his family are okay. But I knew it had to be something pretty serious for him not to play in a World Cup game like that. But England got through convincingly, and they're now looking quite good. They're looking like they're starting to oil the machine.
But they're going to take on France, Mossy, and France have been playing some good footy.
They have, Loz. I still think this World Cup will go down to Brazil, Argentina or France. I think one of those three will lift the cup at the end of it. It's been a wonderful tournament. Well, seriously, the football and the results and the upsets and everything that's happened in this tournament from a football perspective has been first class. Mbappe, I think, will go down as the player of the tournament, but provided they continue to go on the trajectory they're on, he's unstoppable. The two goals he scored last night were freakish, and he really didn't raise a sweat doing it. He's an incredible footballer. Saw him live, obviously. Having seen Mbappe, Ronaldo and Messi, Dembele, obviously, Christian Eriksen, all live and very close to the action, these guys are a completely different level. They are, seriously, they are incredible. I've lost superlatives, to be honest.
This won't shock you, Mossy, but back home, you're looking at the papers today and you just see praise everywhere for Graham Arnold, and now everyone's, you know, sort of looking to the future and what everything's going to look like in the Socceroos setup. And Dean, our man, Bulldog, he's got an exclusive today saying how Graham Arnold's in demand elsewhere as his camp awaits any offer from Football Australia, but apparently he wants to remain Socceroos coach. Bulldog writes, and also writes that a source had no doubt that James Johnson had met with John Aloisi pre the World Cup as well. So it seems what is clear here is Football Australia can't dither in putting an offer to Graham Arnold, because he would probably go elsewhere if the offers come, which they sound like they are, and they're going to pretty quickly.
Well, I can say that I've literally just got back to my apartment from having a couple of post-World Cup beers with Arnie and his wife Sarah and my wife Penny. We had some good discussions, but nothing specific about where the future lies. It was more about how the World Cup went and just my pride in him as a mate and a former assistant of his, in how he's now wrested control of his career back into his own hands. And, you know, he's gone to a whole new level, and that's what World Cups can do. And that's the fickle nature of professional sport, as you all know. Results dictate whether you have control or whether you're at the hands of others. And, you know, I've always said, and I'll stand by this, two things. I always knew he was the right person to take us, the right coach to take us, get us to the World Cup and take us through the World Cup. That's proven. And, you know, the performances of the Socceroos, and mate, incredible. We're at a hotel, and a guy by the name of George Valdano was there. Now, he was an Argentine legend back in the 80s. And I went over and shook his hand. I said, I'll come over there having a beer with Graham Arnold, the Socceroos coach. And straight away, he jumped up and wanted to come over and meet Arnie. And he said, the performance against Argentina, unbelievable. The only difference was Messi. So don't take my word for it. Take Valdano's word for it. That's where he now stands. And that's what World Cups do for players and for coaches. So where he ends up, who knows? But certainly, I don't think Australian football will understand just what they had until Arnie has left the Australian game, if that's the way it goes. If it doesn't, then they'll keep on to a diamond. But I think the public perception of Arnie has definitely changed through this World Cup.
When you look at the squad, Mossy, and what it did at this World Cup and where it possibly could be in 4 years' time, does it look as though we're going to have a stronger team?
Absolutely, Loz. I think that's a great point, mate. Again, what I just said about World Cups and what it does for players and for coaches, if you perform, you're on the world stage. And the number of scouts I've seen from all over the world and been introduced to or been pointed out to through tournament is frightening. It's not called the World Game for nothing. And, I think there's a raft of players that are due for a big move on the back of their performances. You know, I think of the likes of Matty Ryan, I think Harry Suter, Kai Rolls, Bage, Mitchell Duke, Jackson Irvine. We know that Quall's going to Newcastle. Where he goes on loan, we're not sure yet. But if you just think about those names I've just mentioned there, just without even thinking too hard about it, if all those players get moves off the back of this tournament to big clubs in big leagues, we're going to be in a much better place in 4 years' time. And I think accelerating the development of those players from the Ollie Roos from Tokyo through to the Socceroos, going to the Olympic Games, through to the Socceroos and now World Cup, it's got to stand us in good stead. But how we capitalise as a game, I think, is critical. We've got to turn the live sites around Australia that have just packed out these live sites. We've got to turn a percentage of them. We're not going to turn all of them into A-League fans, but the A-League has shown that there's enough quality players in there to go to a World Cup and be really competitive. So it's exciting times for the game.
And just speaking on young talent, I saw a story that, 19-year-old Christian Volpato, of course, declined the offer to be part of the World Cup squad. He actually watched the Socceroos lost to Argentina at the fan zone in Darling Harbour. And you do wonder, as his allegiance is up in the air, playing for Roma, of course, in Serie A, you do wonder the impact watching the Socceroos might have had on him and whether there is a chance that he ends up offering his services to the Socceroos, Mossy.
Yeah, that's right. 100%, Mido. And also a penny for Tom Rogic's thoughts. You know, he missed out on his squad, and at the peak of his powers, he's one of our best players. There's no doubt about that. Trent Sainsbury was over here. I sat with him through some of the games, and, you know, it was hurting. It was hurting Sains not to be involved in his squad. So, you know, what this performance at this World does, and don't get me wrong, Arnie and the coaching staff and the players were gutted about that loss to Argentina because they could feel it, they could smell it, that we're in with a shot when we came back to 2-1 and you look at the chances for Bajic and Kwol, and we could have snatched something and gone to extra time. I think physically we were coming over the top of them. But those players who were sitting back watching it, surely that drives them to be part of the next World Cup. Volpato obviously has to make a decision between Italy and Australia, but our performances would certainly have strengthened the case to play for Australia.
Mossy, if Arnie was to walk away, who's your pick for the next coach? Who's the right person at this time to take over?
Clarky, that's such a huge question. If I'm a coach, and if you think of Aussies, you think probably Popovich, you think Muscat, you think Aloisi.
Yep.
Personally, if I was a coach in their position at their stage of their career, I wouldn't take the Socceroos job because I don't think it's a role for a young coach at their stage of their career. Probably Popovich is best placed, given that he's, you know, done the A-League, he's been overseas and come back to the A-League. But, you know, it's a job that is not predominantly a coaching job. It's more a management job where you're managing between, so you get the players in for a couple of days for, you know, for World Cup qualifiers or Asian Cup or World Cup, but you're not coaching day-to-day. So it's a job for an older coach. So given that, I would say probably Popovich is best placed if we're going Australian. Mm. Otherwise, they may look overseas. But again, I think Arnie's in the driver's seat now. You know, the performances, how the players played for him, the messages coming out of the dressing room. For me, it's his to knock back, but it depends on where FFA goes.
Do you think, are you of the belief that the Australian, or the Socceroos need an Australian coach? I think this is quite mixed around all sports where you've got this thing where you think, well, you need to have grown up in that country, or you need to know the culture or the beliefs or the values, or are you open to the best candidate for the job, no matter where you're from, should be taking this job?
Well, I always say I think it should go to the best candidate, but I think Australia has got enough quality candidates to not have to go foreign. And I think, you know, having said what I've just said about the stage of the careers that Popovich, Aloisi, Muscat are at, I just think, you know, I'm not sure Australia understands the quality of coaches that we've got at our disposal at the moment. And the A-League plays a huge role. If you think of Ange Postecoglou, you know, he cut his teeth in the old National League and then the A-League. Arnie has come through the A-League. Muscat, Popovich, Aloisi, all through the A-League. So that the country has enough quality not to go external. But there's two sides to the story. You know, do you take it at that stage of your career if you're one of those young coaches? Mm. And he's come back at the age of, I think he was 55 when he took the job. And, you know, he's at a good stage of his career to take that job and now maybe launch himself overseas or take it for another 4 years. For a young coach, I'm not so sure.
Well, Mossy, when's the flight home again?
This time tomorrow night. You know, I'm finally coming home, mate.
Ah, beautiful.
With my wife and my son, Nate. But it's been an unbelievable 2.5 weeks. And from a World Cup perspective, Clarky Loz, honestly, I know Qatar's got its issues, you know, around human rights and all that stuff. But the World Cup in isolation has been a magnificent tournament, and it shows no signs of abating until the final is won and done on the 18th of December. So I look forward to coming home and watching the rivet from our TV set in Cromer on the Northern Beaches.
Love it, mate. Well, we appreciate you talking to us every day and keeping us updated from over there, mate, and safe trip home.
It's a real privilege, mate. See you at the other end.
We're watching Brazil put on an absolute clinic at the World Cup. It is 4-0 against South Korea in the first half. Their third and fourth goals, the third goal that Richarlison scored, I can't even describe it. Just go and watch the replay. Just an unbelievable display of skill. And then even the fourth goal, a little chip from just outside the box into the far post, back of the net. This could be anything.
Yeah, their skill execution has been great. What about the celebration at the end of that third goal? Did you see the coach?
Yeah, with the coach. They went over to the coach, didn't they, Loz? Had a little boogie with him.
He had a bit of a dance on the sideline, but it just shows you there how much class they've actually got. But I noticed that right from the start. You look at them and they were just a different class above the others. And that's as clinical as display as I've seen at a World Cup. I mean, they look faster, they look more skillful, they're executing their skill under pressure, and they're just delivering. So it's 4-0. This could get to 8-0, the way they're going.
They've had four shots on target, seven shots overall, Brazil, and they leave 4-0, 38 minutes gone. Incredible performance. By the way, Pup, some of the hyperbole I'm reading over in England.
Oh, it's coming home.
No, this is in relation to the cricket, by the way.
Coming home as well.
Michael Vaughan on his Twitter account, 50-over world champs, T20 world champs, changing the way tests is played.
Please.
England are bloody good. And then he ponders, is England's win the greatest ever test victory? The greatest ever test victory. Not their greatest ever, just greatest ever. Look, they did have a great win last night, by the way, if you're just tuning in. They beat Pakistan by
the greatest ever
74
test
runs in Royal Pindi, which they did late on day five with the light fading. And they took 5 for 9 to ensure... when all three results were possible there for a large part of the final day, but in the end, Pakistan's resistance ended, a 74-run win it was. And now it will honestly make you sick reading some of the commentary over there in England. They think they've just climbed Mount Everest, but at the end of the day, they're a lot better than they were 12 months ago.
Yeah, definitely.
When they came out here.
Yeah, they're still... I think this is... Australia should be looking at taking notice of what they've done with their squad for Pakistan in preparation for India. Now, a good example is Jack Leach's spinner, right? If he plays in Australia, I don't think he's a good enough spinner to be bowling Australian batters out. But over in the subcontinent, left arm, quite fast, at the stumps... natural variation, it's a different game. So same as someone like Jadeja, who's played for India. When he comes to Australia, he doesn't have anywhere near as much success. A lot of the time, they don't even pick him in the team. Mm. But in India, he's nearly unplayable. So Australia should be looking at that in and around who are they going to pick in their squad. Someone like Ashton Agar, I think, in those conditions will be a better option than Swepson, for example. Take both. But I think you've got to look at guys that bowl quite fast, at the stumps, use the pitch. In those conditions, in the subcontinent, very different in Australia, where you probably got to get batters out more in the air or extra bounce and things like that. But we can sit here and laugh and take the mickey out of, you know, Vaughan's tweet. But, mate, England are at the top of the world in the two shortest formats, and their test cricket is getting better just by a change in attitude. Mm. Not change in personnel, not change in stock. This is what I'm trying to say about this Australian team. I believe this team is extremely talented. You think batting, Warner, Labuschagne, Smith, just those three. But they're as good as any three in world cricket. Look at our attack. Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins, Lyon. If you look at statistics, they're as good as any attack in the world. Change in attitude in regards to, I think, let's get that aggressive attacking attitude back, and mate, we can beat any team anywhere in the world.
Just on, Ollie Robinson was man of the match last night for England, 4 for 50, took wickets in the first, did got some runs as well, but 40-year-old James Anderson,
yep,
who got the ball reversing nicely. Yep. These are his figures, 24 overs, 12 maidens, 4 for 36.
Brilliant.
He really, brilliant. And especially back in England,
yep.
Even at age 40, he's going to be a handful, isn't he?
Yep,
as he always is.
They've been smart as well with how they've used Anderson and Broad. I think they got it wrong in Australia. I think they had to pick them both for the first test at the Gabba. I think they got it wrong. And I think they've obviously acknowledged they got a few things wrong. They changed their leadership, their coach, their captain. I'm telling you now, that test match is played in Australia tomorrow. Anderson's not being rested for the first test match against Australia. No chance. And he broads fit, he's probably playing as well. So I think you're going to see, that's what I'm saying, I think you're going to see England are going to be tougher just based on a change in attitude.
And just on selection, and we were speaking earlier about the inclusion of this, well, the new wild thing. Lance Morris in the Australian squad as cover for Pat Cummins, along with Michael Neeser. And Morris, the leading Shield wicket-taker this season so far. And in 18 first-class matches, 59 wickets at 25.08. Clarke, you're saying he's not going to play. But I've got to say, just because, you know, we've got so much cricket coming up, we're playing the West Indies, I want to see him play. Okay. I'd love to see him play. Apparently bowls 150. I haven't seen much
of
him.
Hang on. This is the part.
Jeff Thompson wants him to play.
This is the part that confuses me. So you hate resting players.
Yeah.
You're on the same. You have the same opinion as me, now you want to see this young kid play.
Because,
so who's he play for?
Because let's face it, I don't think the West Indies are a viable opposition.
Okay, so what do we do?
So we're going to do it right now.
Okay, so we're saying Stark, Hazelwood, Cummins, Lyon haven't performed as well as we would like. We think they're better bowlers than how they perform. We want to see them more aggressive. Mm. We want to see them, you know, attack more. Well, how are they going to do that if they don't play? And now you're going to rest one of them in a test match. You're going to rest the player in a test match?
I understand. Do you know what I mean? This is contradictory.
This is the predicament that we're in. But, and what do you do? Not pick Boland?
No, Boland's going to play for
Cummins. So you want to rest the bowler?
Well, I do, because I think Stark, Hazelwood, they've got... Well, a huge series coming up against South Africa where we're resting nobody through that series.
Yep.
And then we're going to India.
Yep.
Late February.
Are those three still playing? Is it the same attack in India?
Well, I think we need to see what our options are.
Yeah, okay. What's happened to Jai Richardson?
Still bruised heel. Okay. Can't get over it. Yeah. I read somewhere yesterday.
Yeah. I think it would be exciting to see this young kid, by all reports, I've never seen him bowl a ball. Well, by all reports, he's rapid. Mm. And he's earned the right to be in the squad. He's a leading wicket taker. So I'm okay with him being there, but he definitely can't jump Boland. And I don't think he can jump Nessa either. Like, Michael Nessa's been around for a while, statistically brilliant, scoring runs, taking wickets, been, you know, workhorse for Queensland, done unbelievable. So I can't see this youngster playing, but I think it's a good selection to have him in the squad. So he's around the guys. So if you're going to pick, if he's going to play all three of them, Boland, Nessa and him need to play. I don't think he can jump Nessa or Boland.
What do you reckon, Loz? Rest the pace attack for this test of very little consequence? I know you can never say that really about a test match, but if you can, it's one against a West Indies side who, well, if they're going to have a crack, it was probably the first test, wasn't it?
If you can play, you play. I'm not for resting a lot of blokes. I understand your point with a lot of cricket coming up, but you know Pat Cummins, he won't play, and there's no need to take risk with these bowlers if there's any doubt with them. So
I don't think Paddy should play Loz, to be honest.
No, he should just miss this test match.
Yeah, I agree.
And then it's up to the selectors decide whether they go for a bloke that can bowl 150 that we haven't seen a lot of. Obviously, they have, and they've seen something in him, but Boland would be the next cab off the rank in terms of what he did last season. I thought he was tremendous and he needs to be given another opportunity.
Just on the text line, morning boys, pre-World Cup, I listened to Graham Arnold being interviewed by Mark Burris on his podcast. I was inspired by what I heard and everything in his plans came to fruition at the World Cup. Never doubted him because of his passion for his country and his players. I encourage you to listen to it now, see what he thinks, says James at Wollongong. Morning, lads. Just wondering what your thoughts on the Socceroos boys going to get photos with Lionel Messi after the game. Personally, I think it's awesome. Yeah, they grew up watching him. It was after the game, so why not get a photo? Some of these keyboard warriors are just so tough behind the screen. Have a good one, lads. The Happy Dragon from Shell Harbour.
Yeah,
I don't have a problem
after
with that.
After the game, that's brilliant, mate. Tell me why you wouldn't. Like, mate, I remember playing my first test match in India. After the test series, I went straight into the Indian change room and asked Sachin for if I could swap shirts with him.
Yeah.
You grow up watching your idol and someone you admire. I think when you're on the field, you're playing hard, but I think that when you get that opportunity, for a lot of these guys, that's their last chance I'll ever see him. Mm. And what a place to sit and watch him as well on the field with him. So it didn't, yeah, they didn't play any less or play softer. The game's over. Go and shake his hand and get your photo and do whatever you got to do.
Now, I see yesterday the Big Bash had its launch in Sydney, pup. Starts next Tuesday. Mm. Now, Sydney Thunder, and we're going to speak to their captain, Jason Senger, today. Yes, Jason Senger's going to be captain, not David Warner. Now, we're Sydney Thunder saying that, well, we're just not going to sit around and wait for Cricket Australia.
Yeah.
To give Warner the okay for this leadership role. So Jason Senger did have a stint last summer for the Thunder as captain when a couple of players were injured. So they've just gone, well, we're just going to give it straight to Jason Senger and not wait for it.
I think it's a smart decision. Well, look, I've copped some... Well, I haven't copped stick. There's headlines around Michael... I say, you know, Warner should never be captain again or he's too old to captain. I think at the moment, we haven't got enough players coming through into international cricket that are leadership ready. Mm. That are ready to captain Australia. Like the conversation around, you know, when Tim Payne resigned, everyone was going, oh my God, who's the next captain? Like we didn't know. I think there should be five guys in the Australian team that could captain at any stage. So the way you get that experience is captain your first class teams, captain your domestic team. So to me, the BBL is an awesome opportunity to allow guys like Jason Senger to captain Sydney Thunder, and you want guys like David Warner in the team. They're like a vice captain without the role.
What a sounding board.
Mate, that's exactly what you want, you know, and that's a big part of why I said I think it's the right time for someone like Pat Cummins to captain Australia, because he's got Warner, Smith, Hazelwood, he had Justin Langer as coach. These guys around him, these senior players around him, that you can go and talk to, that play a leadership role without the C or VC beside their name. So I actually think Sydney Thunder's made the right decision. And then I would definitely be, you know, begging, if I'm Jason Senger, I'd be begging Davey Warner to be, you know, someone I can go to on the field, off the field, talk to him about tactics, because Davey, tactically, is very good. Very good. But I think it's a good decision from the Sydney Thunder. And I think we need to see more of it through our domestic system. We need to be producing more leaders.
Jason Senger is coming up in about 20 minutes' time. Now, what's this? Middo, I'm normally a big supporter of your weather reports and understand that it's a thankless task full of estimations, but today's is on a whole new level. Cloudy showers and mostly sunny. This is Sydney, not Melbourne. Pick one and stick to it. Or better yet, stick your head out the window. Manly 13 plus, says Dora the Free Pourer from Eleonora. Well,
we haven't got a window for starters, unfortunately.
Yeah, so that's a problem.
I'll tell you what though, boys, talking about the weather, I drove back from the South Coast last night and the weather with the rain and thunder and lightning... Did you blokes experience that?
Yes.
No, we had it.
Yeah, it was bucketing down at my house.
Oh, jeez. I was in the car about 9:30 and it was just hammering down. And the lightning was as, and the thunder. I was getting a bit scared in the car. I had to pull over there a couple of times.
Did you?
Yeah.
Oh.
It was pouring down with rain.
Glad you
anyway,
made it home.
I made it home.
Well,
made it home.
Okay. Do you want me to read this
again?
I'm going again from the Bureau Meteorology website. Partly, okay, so today it says on the left, 23 mostly sunny. On the right, Sydney area, partly cloudy, slight chance of a shower, and then goes on about the wind. So it does say everything. You may as well think, it's very much a weather forecast.
I just think you can actually put it in your own words. I don't like you reading this.
No, because this is the actual...
I'd rather you get it
wrong. Okay, well, you can do it. Done.
Okay, I'm going with... It's overcast all day, but it's going to be about 23 degrees. If you get a bit of rain, don't stress it. If you see a bit of sun, don't get your gear off because it's not tanning weather. Just, it's going to be overcast.
Again, you're sitting on the fence.
No, I'm saying just go, expect this. Overcast, 23.
Okay.
If that means shorts and a tee, go for it. For other people, it might mean shorts and a jumper. 23, not bad temperature, but it's overcast all day. Have a good day.
From the City Morning Herald, Adam Pengilly, good morning.
Morning, Jared. Morning, boys. You really need a window in that studio, Jared, don't you?
Oh, we need more than a window. Yeah.
Love one. Love one. But anyway, we soldier on. And recently, James McDonald he was crowned something we already knew, didn't we? That he's the world's best jockey.
Yeah, this news sort of came out over the course of the weekend, Jared. I suppose you can say officially he can be classified as the world's best jockey, and you can probably ask, well, how do they actually decide that? Well, some international horse racing federation body have gone through the top 100 Group 1 races in the world and used a point score system to allocate the world's best jockey. And Zach comes out on top, so no great surprise for anyone who's followed him down here in Australia and New Zealand. We know what top-class jockey he is. And I suppose to win an award like that, you probably need good racehorses, and he's ridden a fair share of good racehorses in the last 12 months, and no doubt having Animo probably helped him winning all those Group 1s in the spring. But, it's a good pub debate, isn't it? But I'm not arguing with the result of that. I think he's clearly the best jockey in Australia and probably the best jockey in the world right now at the moment.
Adam, what's the latest with Jai McNeil?
Yeah, some pretty deflating news, Clark. He's had a really tough start to his stint over there in Hong Kong. He obviously moved over to Hong Kong on a riding contract a few weeks ago. He hasn't ridden a winner yet. And we know what the Hong Kong owners in particular are like over there. They have this really weird perception. If you don't start fast over there and ride winners, they think you're sort of bad luck and there's bad juju around you and they don't want to put you on their horses. So that's a bit of a bad start for him. But unfortunately, he's contracted COVID as well and won't be able to ride an international jockeys meeting at Happy Valley on Wednesday night, which is a huge meeting. He had a chance to represent Australia alongside Jamie Carr. He had to withdraw from that meeting now, given he's still suffering from the effects of COVID, which means that Huey Bowman's going to take his spot representing Australia in that meeting. So Jane Harrow and Huey were doing honours for Australia. For New Zealand, obviously, Jane's over there to represent New Zealand. And I think Zach Fern's even riding as well, but he's representing Hong Kong rather than Australia. So very much looking forward to that meeting on Wednesday night at Happy Valley. If you haven't been to a meeting like that, I've been there once before. It is an amazing night. It's absolutely incredible. The atmosphere on track, and I recommend anyone get over there, get a chance to do it, go over there to Happy Valley on that Wednesday night for the start of International Week, which is a great week.
What about Amelia's Jewel? She was very impressive winning the Northerly Stakes. She's built up an impressive record. What's her target going to be, or targets, for next season?
Yeah, we spoke about this yesterday, Lars. We weren't quite sure what connections are going to do, but they've come out in the last 24 hours and said, okay, we've got a plan for next year for 2023. They're going to target the Quokka, which is going to be that new slot-style race over there in Western Australia in the early part of next year. It's going to be held in April, so that's probably a natural target for her. But the thing I found really interesting was they've sort of announced what her goal is going to be for the spring, and they're talking about the Golden Eagle as being the primary target coming to Sydney across for the spring. So we know that money speaks all languages, and the amount of money on offer in the Golden Eagle next year is probably going to lure her over to the East Coast and to Sydney rather than Melbourne. So that's great news for any fans over here in Sydney trying to watch. Probably his horse is going to be one of the best horses in Australia to manage for the next couple of years. So that's fantastic news. And I suppose you have one chance to target a Golden Eagle as a four-year-old. So I'm really going to take that up, and we'll see, hopefully, all things being well, in the spring next year.
I also saw Anthony Cummins talk about his filly. She's extreme targeting the Golden Eagle, and she was the very impressive winner in the Oaks.
Yeah, she's been great, like, haven't she? And no doubt they've got some options for the autumn as well. I think Anthony wouldn't mind getting to a Queen's of Stakes at the end of her campaign in the autumn too. And I tell you, the options they've got, Loz, in the spring are just incredible. I mean, consider they can sort of stretch them out to the Cox Plate over 2,000 metres if they want to. They can just keep them a little bit fresher and target a race like the Golden Eagle, which a lot of four-year-olds do now. We saw even Gypsy Goddess for David Van Dyke. He ran that filly first up in the Golden Eagle this year, and she ran an enormous race. And you just wouldn't expect a horse like her. It's probably going to be a better 2,000-metre horse in time to target a race like the Golden Eagle. But that's the amount of money that's on offer these days, and Connections obviously keen to try and take advantage of that. When the four-year-olds once, you've got to have a crack, I suppose.
Now, charges have been laid over the Birdsville Cup Jigger Probe.
Yeah, this story just keeps fascinating me, Jerry. I just cannot believe this all stuff from a photo that was put on social media and someone noticed it. But the Queensland Racing Integrity Commission, the stewards of finally progressed that probe, and obviously the trainer Todd Austin and the jockey Rick Lamarne have had charges laid against them yesterday. I'm not quite sure where it's going to land. They're probably looking at some very lengthy penalties, I would have thought, but at least that inquiry is progressing, and we'll get some more news in the next few weeks.
Adam, have you seen some of these goals at the Brazil-South Korea game this morning?
I'm not watching it at the moment, Jerry. I'm going to watch the highlights when I get home, but it is... I've seen some of the reaction on social media and the websites and everything. It's phenomenal, isn't it?
Oh, it is... good a skill as you'll ever see. But, mate, you sink your teeth into that. Have a good day, and we'll chat tomorrow.
See you, boys.